Like King Solomon, you split the name in two. Belgioioso, the second B in BBPR, was Lodo, for close friends. And you were Vico, even Il Vico, with the definitive article that makes everyone unique in this city. To be honest, you didn't frequent Belgioioso, who was from another generation, but you knew his partner in that acronym, Ernesto Nathan Rogers. More than an acquaintance, a revered friend, a mentor. He was your teacher at Lausanne when you tried to earn a degree during the war, a refugee from the air raids, and he was even the best man at your wedding when Milan was a poor city but one full of the desire to rebuild. Do you remember? Everyone ran. You raced round on foot or on a bicycle, since there were very few cars at the time. Do you remember your little dog, Vico, which spent entire afternoons lying belly up in the sun in the street in front of your studio, right in the heart of the city? Families have a destiny in Milan, like places. You had an architect ancestor, Gaetano Bisia, who had built the austere bulk of Palazzo Arquinto in the Santa Maria della Passione district. Your father, on the other hand, made the building at the corner of Via Conservatorio and Via Bellini, right in front of the church of Santa Maria della Passione. Years later, you had the chance to design the building next door, a trilateration of styles and eras. Almost family portraits hung on the walls of urban corridors, one beside the next, in the span of but a few footsteps. You never sensed the burden of responsibility, never felt anxious to prove achievement, to compete with others. You were an architect, as it was obvious you would be. You understood it immediately when you were still a student and your father, Pier Giulio, advised you to make some changes to an exercise you had done for class. It was too bare, with those exposed steel beams, too modern. He was linked to the Novecento style, the eminent forms of Portaluppi, with whom he had worked on the design of the Arengario on Piazza del Duomo. He certainly couldn't understand your design. He drew it again. He made it more ornamental, not high-handedly, but like a father helping a son who's having trouble with something. You were wise enough to simply thank him, but you brought your own design to the review. Family and tradition are well and good, but the path to take was yours, without reverential hesitation. Pier Giulio died young, Vico. He never had a chance to see you graduate. For you, it was obvious to take his place in the studio where you visited him in your childhood, going down from the apartment on the next floor. You worked there all your life, just three rooms, practically the custodian's lodge of the building. You didn't need much more. You were not a manager, you said, not a designer. You were an architect. You had to have ideas, and your father's studio was enough in order to have them. Maybe by leaning out the window, towards the Dome of the Passione, a mannerist masterpiece, to listen to the students at the conservatory rehearsing a quartet. Music was always one of your passions, just as you had a passionate aversion for cars. You went about on foot, or in the subway, Albini's subway, the only truly modern work in Milan, you said. You seldom drove, and you drove badly. Above all, because you were busy listening to your Mozart or your Beethoven, your hands often leaving the wheel to conduct a particular passage. The most ethereal of the arts, music, simultaneously pure concept and pure emotion, the emotion you sought in the things you imagined. This was your way of designing. To first have an idea, a concept, to seek an emotion. Drawing was the least of your worries. You boasted of having designed directly over the phone. If the idea was clear, if it was necessary, there was no need for frills. It could be explained verbally, and in a certain sense, it would draw itself. You felt like the heir to the Lombard rationalist tradition when you said these things, among friends and colleagues, not at a university, because with your subtle humour, you liked to say that those who know how to do things, do them, while those who do not know, become teachers. You didn't teach. You did things. In your little studio, you and your helper from the outset, the geometer Franco Montella, who with his fine surname from south of Italy and his professional title made you two immediately seem like the perfect odd couple of an Italian comedy. The bourgeois from Milan and the southern man of the people, who came to the studio with a copy of the newspaper Unità under his arm, donned a smock, which turned grey over the years, and gave form to your ideas in technical drawings, between one MS cigarette and another, an incorrigible smoker, that Montella, with whom you talked about your Inter, your favourite football team, mooching a smoke now and then, but always in the polite form, using lei. 40 years of professional and human friendship, so profound that when he passed away, you had the urge to close up shop for good. But you always addressed each other as lei, out of respect, not manner. You used a more familiar form of address, too, with your classmates and colleagues, like Zanuso, Gardella, Castiglioni. In the 1950s, you would meet up to talk things over at the Humanitaria. Industrial design, politics, philosophy. Everything was new and extraordinary. A trip to New York by air could become an excuse for Rogers to give a lecture on the clouds seen from the airplane window. This was the start of Italian design. A group of friends hungry for new things who met up with the world of crafts of the outskirts of the city, which was transforming into something more and was demanding something more of the talents from the city. It wanted to be an industry, to invent the new forms of modern life. There were people like Gismondi, Mazza, Cassina. They would drop by the studio without even entering the courtyard to pick up the models, the templates, directly from the studio window, while your dogs nosed in the sunlight, belly up. Milan was a city that was losing the habits of a town, but still didn't know about those of a metropolis. Everything happened in an area of a few square kilometres. Luigi Cacciadominioni often rode by on his bicycle with a cheerful ring of the bell to salute Montella. You were young men in a young republic, but sensible, as was the family custom. No bohemians amongst you. The pieces you designed had to last for years, for decades. You didn't care about fashion. You loved the Tonet chair, in production for 150 years. You photographed everything, seeking out indispensable objects, looking at common things with an uncommon gaze, to find their essence. How many clumsy copies exist, for example, of your Natalie bed? The matter amused you, Vico, or intrigued you. You imagined people seeing your objects in shop windows and saying to themselves, I could have made that myself. Which was true, but I hadn't done it. You had thought of it first, because you understood its essence, its necessity. You had a sort of understated British elegance, Vico. Your only concession to eccentricity was the thing of the bright red socks, an ironic festive detail. Red, like many of your urban projects scattered all over Milan. Red, which was supposed to be the colour of the tower of Parco Sempione, a tower, not a skyscraper, like the Torre Velasca, in keeping with the local naming tradition. Red, like the building on Via San Marco, but not just any red. When construction was already underway, you noticed the colour of a jacket of a passerby. That was the red you were looking for. A comic scene, convincing the person to sell you the jacket so you could bring it to the worksite. When you moved your home to Via del Gesù in the 1970s, you had a great excuse for your morning walks from the house to the studio. Along the way, you would stop in at the Padova showroom on Corso Venezia for a cup of coffee and a conversation with the craftsman or with Maddalena, the champion of industrial taste, talent scout, far-sighted businesswoman. You had studied at the Parini High School like a good scion of the Milan middle class, and you were proud of your classical culture, your humanist sensibilities. The first computer didn't enter your studio until 2003, though you had no disdain for technology. You just didn't feel the need for it. You were interested in ideas. You did concept design, and you would never in your life have wanted to design the Countess's parlor. You are not a decorator. Your house in London, when at the height of your international renown you began to spend time at the Royal College of Art, was full of objects you had invented, often uncomfortable ones, a laboratory of thought, not an egotistical museum. Your buildings are all over Milan, from the towers of the Gallaratese to the Famagosta Depot, from the QT8 Church to the Department of Biology at Città Studi. And where you were unable to take your architecture, you brought your conceptual objects, chairs, sofas, tables, bookcases. This was your way of making Milanese character known to the world, with very little theory and lots of sensibility, to be practical and emotional at the same time. Every one of your objects is a narrative. You were often inspired by the novels you eagerly consumed. It was Victor Hugo in Les Misérables, for example, that triggered the idea for the Eclisse. You were in the subway, thinking about the description of the lantern of Jean Valjean in Flight. You closed the book and made a note, a sketch, on the back of your subway ticket. The idea became your most famous lamp, which you even began to detest over the years. "They won't refrain from putting on my tomb," you caustically remarked. Don't worry, Vico, that did not happen. You've been placed in the family tomb together with your lineage of Milanese architects. At the Cimitero Monumentale, obviously, as was only right, as the bourgeois tradition recommends for the illustrious sons and daughters of this city.